You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. I'm Art Ray. Today's guests are Dan Millman and Susan Lenvay. First, we'll talk to Dan Millman. Dan Millman, a former world champion athlete, coach, martial arts instructor, and college professor, is author of Way of the Peaceful Warrior, which was adapted to film in 2006, and numerous other books read by millions of people in 29 languages. Dan teaches worldwide and has influenced people from all walks of life, including leaders in the fields of health, education, business, and politics. His most recent book is The Four Purposes of Life. To find out more, go to peacefulwarrior.com. He is a featured presenter at the new Virginia Beach ARE conference, The Four Purposes of Life, Finding Meaning and Direction in a Changing World, from September 7th to the 9th, 2012. To find out more, go to edgarcayce.org, click on Events, and then click on Conferences.
Thank you for coming on the show today. You have quite a bit of accomplishments that we could go over, but I want to ask you about your latest book, The Four Purposes of Life, Finding Meaning and Direction in a Changing World. Could you tell us about that book?
Well, I'd be happy to, Art. Let me provide just a bit of context, though, for people who aren't familiar with me or my work. I used to be an athlete and a coach. I was a world champion, actually, on the trampoline, and I did gymnastics in college. Our team was a national and collegiate champions, and I was focused on how to develop talent for sport, of course, focusing on qualities like strength and flexibility and coordination and rhythm and balance and timing and reflex speed. And when I coached at Stanford University for 4 years, rather than working on the skills of athletics, we worked on the fundamentals of talent to actually help people become more talented in the sense of being able to learn faster and easier and rise to higher levels. And my theories did work out pretty well in practice, Art. Our team went from the bottom of the conference to one of the top three teams in the United States in 3.5 years, and I coached the top U.S. Olympian. And I might still be coaching today, but, I realized that being able to do gymnastic skills didn't help me much when I went out on a date or when I got married or had children or dealt with financial challenges and the issues we all meet in everyday life. So I started asking bigger questions, not how can we develop talent for sport, but how can we develop a talent for living? And that search, that question led me around the world. I studied with various mentors, and it eventually, after about 2 decades of intensive practice and training and exploration, I created an approach to living that I call the Way of the Peaceful Warrior, which is about living with a peaceful heart, but also recognizing there are times we need a warrior's spirit. And so that, I think, provides a context for the 16 books I've written over the last 30 years on various topics. And even though my most recent book, The Four Purposes of Life, was written later in my career, it's actually an ideal book to read early on if someone has read my first book, Way of the Peaceful Warrior, or seen the movie based on that book with Nick Nolte, they might be curious, gee, I want to read something more about this. And The Four Purposes of Life is a very good book to provide a context for all the things and varied things I've taught over the years. So now I'm satisfied I've provided a context. People have a sense of where I'm coming from, and I'm then happy to talk about The Four Purposes of Life as a book.
You mentioned the movie The Peaceful Warrior. For those who want to become more acquainted with that philosophy, is that a good introduction?
Well, you know, a movie is a meal for consciousness in about 2 hours. It's very accessible, anybody of any age, whether they read a lot or don't read much. So, yes, I would say the movie, it captures some of the spirit and some of the ideas of the book. And people seem to really like it. I mean, many people, I know it sounds crazy, but I've heard people say, I've seen the film 100 times, it's become one of those cult films, and it's available on, you know, Netflix and DVD and everywhere pretty much. So, yes, the movie Peaceful Warrior is a good way for someone to get some sense, anyway, of the story, actually it's my story as a young athlete and what I learned from an unusual old gas station attendant who I ended up calling Socrates. He's played by Nick Nolte in the movie. So, yeah, the book covers more than the movie, as usually happens, but the movie's a good introduction.
With your latest book, The Four Purposes of Life, the title might catch some people off guard because they think, you know, you're supposed to focus on one purpose or maybe two purposes. Now, what are the four purposes you speak of?
Well, you bring up a good point, Art. And in fact, after I wrote the book, a friend of mine heard the title and said, well, wait a minute, Dan. He said, you know, I know the purpose of life. He said, it's love. He said, whatever the question, love is the answer. Well, it sounded good to me. I couldn't argue with that. Maybe a bit idealistic, because if somebody has a problem in everyday life, you don't just say, well, love, love, love. They go, well, what do I do with that advice? But still, it's a wonderful purpose to learn to love. As someone else I know said, well, Dan, I know the purpose of life. It's enlightenment, illumination, a personal growth. That's what we're here for, to wake up and so on. And that sounds good, too. And I have other friends with other ideas. But, you know, just as we can divide the days of the year into four primary seasons, and we can divide the points on a compass into four main directions. By looking at our life through the filter of the four purposes I present in my latest book, Art, we get a sense of order, structure to our lives rather than this chaos. Because many people are confused about their purpose because they think there's only one. But I looked at it. I've made it my business for decades, actually, to look at some fundamental questions about life, free will, major questions about purpose and meaning and direction in our lives, the bigger picture. We lose the forest for the trees, so to speak, and I like to remind people of this bigger picture. So in the book, and as you may know, I'm going to be speaking at the ARE in Virginia Beach on the four purposes of life, going into more depth. But what I can summarize for you in answer to your question, and I hope I'm not being too wordy, but I'd like to be clear and complete if I can.
Oh, yes.
Okay. The first purpose of life may sound banal. It may sound mundane. It's learning life's lessons. And yet there's much more to it. You know, nobody slaps their forehead when they hear that. They go, well, yeah, sure. It's one of the things we're here to do, is learn from our life experience and grow wiser. But I'm saying something a little more radical than that. I'm saying one of our first fundamental purpose in life is not just having a good relationship or getting a job and being successful, you know, having enough money to live on and achieve some abundance and so on. It's not the usual things we aim for in life. That's wonderful part of life, love, relationships, finances, health, and all that. But what fundamentally we're here to do through all those challenges is to learn, to gain wisdom. The idea I propose is that Earth is a school, daily life is our classroom. And lessons repeat themselves until we learn them. Have you noticed that? I know I have. And if we don't learn the easy lessons, they get harder. So fundamentally, it's a school for souls, you could say. And that means no one can ever fail at anything if they learn from it, because that's the cake. The rest is the icing. The cake is learning lessons. And I go into, in my lecture at the ARE, I'm going to be going into, and in the book, it goes into the 12 courses we're all here to complete in daily life. Many of us aren't clear on what courses we're actually taking here, and how to do that, how to get a handle on that. It goes into the school rules, which we call natural or universal or spiritual laws. That's all part of the first purpose. And then I go into the second purpose, which is actually the longest section in the book. It's finding our career and our calling. And I differentiate in the book and in my seminars when I have more time, the difference between a calling and a career. Sometimes they meld into one. My calling and my career are one. Maybe yours too, Art. I love what I do. And if someone asks me, how do I know if my career is also my calling? I go, well, it's easy. If you won the lottery, would you keep doing it? And if you would, it's a calling. If you wouldn't, it's just a job, and that's fine too. You know, we're always told you have to love your work. Do what you love, and the money will follow, and follow your heart. That's good advice for one's calling, not necessarily good advice for a career, because our career is the way we make an income. It's the primary focus on, you know, we may have a lot of perks, we may like the people we work with and so on, but if we weren't making any money, we'd have to find something else to do, because it's about producing an income for ourselves, our families. So that's about career. Our calling, though, is that deeper sense of what do we love doing? What would we spend a lot of time doing if we had all the time we needed and all the money we needed? And sometimes, again, they become the same. Sometimes they're quite separate. Either way is okay. So I go into a lot about career decision-making, finding the right career for us and so on, when I have more time and a longer venue. And then, in brief, Art, the third purpose is the most mysterious, most controversial, and probably one of the most popular in all my writings. I summarize a system, an uncannily accurate system, for determining our hidden calling, our life path. And anyone listening to this recording can just go to my website and click on Life Purpose.
We'll be right back with more. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Cayce. We're back with Dan Millman.
Anyone listening to this recording can just go to my website and click on Life Purpose, and there's a Life Purpose calculator there. They can put in their date of birth, day, month, and year, and they will see a teaser, a little bit of information about their life path. No charge, it's free, just they can do it. And it also lets them know more about one of my most popular books called A Life You Were Born to Live, which is a big book, it's a reference book, addressing this core purpose, this life path. So that's something practical. I didn't mention my website if somebody wants to know it. It's peacefulwarrior.com, and that's with one L, peaceful, and then warrior, W-A-R-R-I-O-R, peacefulwarrior.com, and they can find that life purpose calculator, click on, or just click on life purpose, and they can access that information in brief. And then in the time we have, I'm just going to mention the fourth purpose, which may be the most important purpose of all. Because, you know, once I get through in my seminar and lectures, when I get through explaining more details about these three first purposes, people go, wow, that's a lot of information, a lot of things, you know. But how do you bring it down to earth right now? And the fourth purpose of life integrates the first three. It's attending to our purpose in this arising moment. Because, you know, sometimes it seems overwhelming, all the things we have to do in life. But we can always handle this moment. My purpose right now, in this moment, is very clear, isn't it? Speaking with you, Art, your purpose is doing what you do right now. So we're always clear on our purpose in each moment. We get lost when we think about our cosmic purpose and so on. So I go into, I think as well, and I know this sounds a bit like hubris, but I'm saying it as objectively as I can. I think I explain this whole idea. We hear a lot about living in the present, but I explain what that means and what it doesn't mean. And how to do it as clearly as it has been explained in any book I've ever heard of or read. So that is the fourth purpose of life. And then in the epilogue to the book, I go into our spiritual purpose, which the first four enable us to do. So that's, in a nutshell, in a brief time, a flavor for my... And it's a little book, by the way. It's a small, easy read, but there's a lot in it. The four purposes of life, and that's what I'm going to be happy to come to Virginia Beach and speak about at the ARE.
Wow. Well, thanks for all this information. And, of course, people can find out more about your conference at edgarcayce.org, and then click on events and then click on conferences. Well, thanks again for coming on the show today.
I look forward to my visit there, and thanks for having me on, Art.
Our next guest is Susan Lendvay, who's the editor of Venture Inward, the member magazine of Edgar Cayce's ARE, and Venture Inward newsletter. She's involved with all aspects of every issue, including selecting articles and artwork with her team, working with the authors on copy edits, and responding to letters to the editor. She moved to Virginia Beach to be close to the ARE initially, as part of the work-study program, and next, as volunteer proofreader in the Readings Research Department. She was then hired for the newly created position of proofreader and researcher and has worked for the ARE for almost 30 years.
Thanks for coming on the show today.
It's nice to be here.
Well, now, how did you learn about Edgar Cayce?
I was living in Charlottesville, and I was reading all sorts of books about the parapsychology and metaphysical things, and I happened to read a book that had his name in it, just mentioning Edgar Cayce in Virginia Beach. And I think I was 21 or something like that, very young, and I thought, I wonder if he's still there. I was just fascinated by the name. I don't know why exactly. So I wrote to Edgar Cayce, Virginia Beach, Virginia, and they delivered my letter to the ARE, and I got a really nice letter back. What I did was I said, are you there? Just wondering if anything was still going on here. And I got a letter back with some books and some materials, and somebody said, oh, welcome, and you can pay us back for the books, or if you don't like them, send us back, you know, the books, the package. And I was so impressed by that. I just thought, oh my gosh, what wonderful people. And I loved the study group materials that they sent me. They sent me Search for God books, and I was fascinated, and I joined a study group, and so I've been with the ARE ever since, which is a very long time.
How did you go from working with the study groups to being employed at the ARE?
There were several people with ties to Virginia Beach in my study group, and somebody offered to bring me down here for a conference. It was the very first Easter conference that was ever held in 73, I believe. Yeah. Or 72. And so I came down to visit and to see what a conference was like. And I just felt so at home and so like I belonged here and like I was supposed to be here. And after that, I just worked really hard to find a place to stay and maybe find a job. And I found the work-study program, which was held at the Marshall's Hotel, which was across the street from the ARE. And that was a place where you could work and study for the whole summer. You would get a free place to live, and free room and board, and attend any of the conferences or use the library or listen to lectures. And in return for working 6 days a week, either in the cafeteria or cleaning rooms or in the laundry, it was a wonderful, wonderful program. There were 25 people, and we had our own study group, and I just was absolutely fascinated by the readings, which I then started reading, and I decided I had to work here, and I volunteered. After the summer was over, there were no jobs, so I said, well, I'll volunteer. What can I do? My best talent is proofreading, and so they put me in the readings research department to proofread because they were publishing more and more of the readings, and they needed somebody to make sure that they were accurate. And so that was a perfect job for me. And then when I was running out of money and I had to leave, they said, oh, no, we need you, and they created a part-time job, and so I've been here ever since.
Wow. Well, now, yep. So then you were working with the readings, I guess.
Right away.
Right away. Wow, goodness. And now, did you work with Gladys Davis?
I did. I was in a department with May St. Clair. She was the readings research department, and Gladys Davis was just... She has been my favorite person. She was a real role model. But she was in charge of the Edgar Cayce Foundation and keeping the readings accurate and making sure that nobody changed them or interpreted them or something like that. And so she took me in. She sort of took me under her wing and let me help proofread things. And I had some wonderful experiences with her, which I could share.
Oh, yes.
Well, the very first year that I was working here, the staff had a little newsletter where they would put the staff birthdays in for each month. And on June 1st, which was my birthday, they came out with a list, and my birthday wasn't on it. And I thought, oh, no, my birthday isn't on here. I was so sad. And Gladys Davis came walking into my office, And she said, "Happy birthday, Susan." And she was bringing me a little cutting from her African violet, which was very precious to her. Apparently it was Edgar Casey's favorite flower, I just found out the other day. And she had brought me a little cutting in a Dixie cup of water. And I said, "How did you know it was my birthday?" And she had a copy of this little newsletter in her hand. And she said, "Well, it's right here. It says today's your birthday." And I said, "No, it doesn't. It was left off." And she said, "Yes, it does. Here, look at it." And we both looked at it, and it wasn't on there. She had had a psychic experience of some sort, and I was just amazed. And I thought, this is so special. This woman is so extraordinary and wonderful, and that she would go out of her way to give me this little flower. And I've just admired her, not because of that, but she has been a wonderful presence and a light here at the ARE. I believe she still is.
Well, now, did you participate in scanning in the readings for computer storage?
No, I did not. I think you might be talking about the CD-ROM that was being created.
Well, yes, I was wondering, when did they...
And those were not scanned. Those were typed in.
Wow.
Word by word. There was a group of five people, and they spent, I think, 2 or 3 years, and they typed every single thing, and they proofread against the original, and that was just quite a huge project. And I believe, I don't remember exactly the year, but I know that Gladys Davis died in 85 or 86, and I remember when she died thinking, oh, she just wanted to leave before everything got really complicated with the computers. That was just my own. So that's what makes me think it was completed around that time, somewhere in the mid-80s.
Wow.
And that was just a big, big boon, because before that, we used to compile books and articles and all sorts of things by using the handwritten index, which had taken many, many years to compile. And we used to learn little tricks to go around finding things in the index, because it wasn't like a scannable CD-ROM or DVD like we now have, where you just put in a word and it shows you everywhere where that word or phrase was used. We had to use the index, and so it was a big turning point in the accessibility of the readings.
Wow. How long have you been the editor of Venture Inward magazine?
Since 2006 or 7. I'm not good at history.
We'll be right back with more with Susan Lenvay. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Casey. We're back with Susan Lenvay.
What aspects do you like best about your job?
Well, I get to use my talents, which when I first came here and I said, well, my best talent is proofreading, and I also have a talent for editing, and I have a deep love for the readings and for the ARE. I think it's a wonderful place that saves people's lives and heals people. And so I think my favorite thing about it is getting people's stories. People send in their stories, and we can't publish all of them because we don't have, you know, the money or the time or the space. But reading them is just an incredible experience, and trying to share them with as many people as possible, and thinking that even if one person reads this and it just gives them the big aha moment or answers a question that they've had deep inside, which is what happens most often. You know, we get the responses and people say, this was just what I needed. And even though some people don't like the same story that somebody says changed their life, it works out. So I think that's my favorite part of it.
Wow.
Certainly not working with the computer. That's not my favorite part.
Oh, goodness. Well, now, I'm sure you have some wonderful stories about the ARE. Of course, like what you just told us about Gladys Davis and, you know, some of the other characters who work there. Do you have a favorite?
I like that you call them characters because even though Hugh Lynn was one of the most special people here, but so is his son Charles Thomas, and the two of them, I learned so much from watching them. Even though they gave lectures and they taught and they gave workshops and they traveled around the country, but what I would get to see that a lot of people didn't was to see how they would be, let's say, in the lobby and somebody would walk in the door and just look momentarily lost, and they would go right over and say, "How can I help you? Welcome to the ARE." Or they would sit down next to a person who just looked maybe lonely or something. They would take this personal heart interest in people. And I think I just learned so much from, as the Casey readings say, what you do, what you are, speaks so loud that your words can seldom be heard. Something like that. That's not an exact quote. But the people, there are so many people here who just shine and glow with just who they are, and it's really a privilege to be here and just meet all the people who come and go.
Well, what is the strangest experience you had there?
Strangest. Well, everything that happens, all the mystical things you could say are strange. I don't think of them as strange anymore, but one of my favorite things was that I was compiling one of the series. It used to be a hardback series, which was all full of readings on certain topics. And I had seen a little excerpt from a reading on something, and I wanted so much to use it, and of course there was no way to find it. And I thought, how could I ever find that again? I wish I could use that. And somehow the next reading I opened to do my work, it just happened to be right there. And that was one of the things that told me that you don't have to know everything. You don't have to have all the right equipment. That if you really, really want to do something wonderful, it can just be handed to you. And I have just believed in the spirits and the guides and the angels that just make things come about magically sometimes.
Well, do you have a favorite author or lecturer?
I don't know if I have any favorites, because I have learned so much from so many different works and different people, and I've been so fortunate to be here, because if you're on the staff, you can go to many, many lectures for free that you wouldn't be able to. And I remember once back in the 70s, Ram Dass was here. Ram Dass, who wrote Be Here or Now. And he was a favorite of mine. I was in the 70s and I was being a real hippie, you know, not in the bad sense, but in the good sense of trying to learn about the spiritual and the meaning of life other than material. And I had really loved his book. It had taught me a lot. So I thought, oh, Ram Dass is here. And we all sat on the floor because we had to include so many people. There wasn't room in the auditorium. And I remember one thing he said from, I don't know how, 40 years ago or whatever it was. There was a little child who started crying in the back of the room. And Ram Dass was up front speaking into the microphone. And he stopped. And you know how many speakers just keep going. They ignore things like that. He stopped and he said, "What's the matter, little boy?" And the little boy yelled out, "I need a Band-Aid." And Ram Dass said, "We all need a Band-Aid." And who could forget something like that? You know, and I've heard so many speakers who have given me so many things to file away, and so I don't have a favorite that I can say.
Oh, goodness. Well, yeah, but that sounds like a lot of favorites, perhaps.
Well, yeah. and to me, the readings, which doesn't have there's no author to the readings. Edgar Casey wasn't the author, but the readings give me strength and inspiration every single day. And that's one of the reasons I love being here. And my work makes me have to look up readings and just check them for mistakes. And, of course, in doing so, I see all sorts of extraneous things that aren't part of what I'm doing, but they're on the same page. And I just, they all feed me spiritually, you might say.
Hmm.
So I guess the readings are my favorite author, my favorite compilation of works.
Oh, yes. How has the ARE changed over the years since you've been there?
In a lot of ways, it hasn't changed. When I came here, I felt it was a very loving, welcoming sort of place, which was what drew me in. And I believe it still is that. We have added a lot of programs that we didn't have before. We never had a spa. We had a therapy department. But now people can come here and experience a lot of the treatments that Casey recommended. And I would say the computerization of the readings has made a huge difference in what the ARE can offer, the accessibility, the people all over the world who can now access the website and in a split second get some information or inspiration. That, I think, has been the biggest change. My particular office is in what we call the old hospital building, the building that was first built in 1929. And I sometimes feel that it is still a hospital of sorts. I feel that people come here to get healed, even though they might think they came here to get a job typing or filing. But I think people come here to get healed, ultimately, and to have experiences that are, in the long run, really, really helpful and meaningful, even though some of them don't feel good at the time, if that's understandable.
Oh, yes. You've proofread a lot of readings, and you looked at the readings a lot. What is the most inspirational reading to you?
That's a hard question.
I guess it changes over the years, perhaps. There's so many.
Well, really, there's a 262 series, which became the study group, a Search for God study group readings. And I most often, when I see one of the quotes from the 262 series, we call it, those are very inspiring. They're moving, and they really stop me and make me realize something, or just they're awe-inspiring. But then there are so many readings. This is a hard one. I don't have one favorite reading. I have, my wall is full of little sticky notes with reading quotes, and at home I've got some stuck up on the wall and on the mirror, and there's just, I think that you see what you need to see, you know, when you go to read something or you open something up, if you're on a particular search for understanding something, you will get an answer. And I have found that to be true for many, many years. And so it's not like a favorite reading, but the readings will often give me an inspiration that I need for that moment, because we're always working on some little path toward achieving something or understanding something. And so it changes.
We'll be right back with more. You're listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Casey. Let's continue our conversation with Susan Lendvay.
And you tend to understand something better maybe 20 years later. The first time you read it, you might say, what is he talking about? Because you're not on that wavelength. But then 20 years later, sometimes, oh, I see what he's saying, because maybe you've experienced it. And we do learn from experience much more than just from words. The words tend to solidify or give a name to a feeling or an experience or a lesson. But if you just read a lot of words, you can't really learn that way. And the readings, the Casey readings say that too. They say you learn by experience. So that's why Casey urged people to apply anything they found in the readings. Don't just file it away in your brain, but try to apply it somehow, and then you'll really learn something.
How do people go about getting a subscription to Venture Inward magazine?
Well, it's a membership, not a subscription. We used to have subscriptions, but now when you get a membership, it's tax deductible, which means it's a contribution. And so you have to become a member, and then you get the magazine and you get a lot of other benefits. But that's how you get the magazine. You can get it online without using paper, or as a lot of people still like to get it in their hands so they can put it down and pick it up and put it away for later rereading.
All right. Well, I was wondering also another question. Has Venture Inward always been known as Venture Inward magazine?
Well, Venture Inward started in late 1984. And it was named that from the very beginning, and it was named Venture Inward because of a book that Hewlin Casey wrote, which was called Venture Inward, and which obviously he was writing to talk about going deep within and venturing, which means be brave and go inward instead of just looking to the outside. And it seemed to be a really good name for the magazine. And Robert Smith is his name. He was the founding editor, and he was the editor for 22 or 3 years. And he discovered that name, and he felt that was the perfect name. And before that, we had something called the ARE Journal, which was sort of a Reader's Digest size journal. Smaller, not like a regular magazine size, like Venture Inward. And it didn't have illustrations or pictures. And it was mostly, it had wonderful articles as well. I still go back and read some of those. But it was a different format. It was smaller, and it was much humbler. And the magazine was devised as a way to get a lot of information to members in one package, because what we used to do was send out the journal, and then we sent out this little news. The ARE news would go separately, and all the flyers and all the conference announcements, everything came separately. And we said, well, how about a magazine? It was, I think it was a really brilliant idea, and it's been popular, and it has changed a little bit over the years. But it's still a very popular item if you're an ARE member, for giving you all kinds of information and telling you what events are happening and when and where. And then authors, we have wonderful authors. Some of them are famous people, and some of them are people who just write in and say, I learned this wonderful thing by this happening to me, and I know people love reading those too. And then we have the speakers, the conference speakers who write articles, and that's becoming more and more popular, because now that metaphysics and spiritual matters are more out in the marketplace, as you know, there are so many books and so many authors and psychics, and it's become much more commonplace. And so there are such a variety of really inspiring and interesting people, and we have them come here and do a lecture or a conference, and we also have them write an article to give people a sample of what they teach, and that's been very popular recently.
Wow. Well, thank you for all this information, and thanks again for coming on the show today.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Well, it's time for the Thought for the Day. And today's Thought for the Day will be read by Allison Ray, my wife. Well, hello.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, good. And what's today's Thought for the Day?
Today's Thought for the Day is 2156-1. Only music may span that space between the finite and the infinite. Music may be the means of arousing and awakening, the best of hope, the best of desire, the best in the heart and soul of those who will and do listen. Is not music the universal language, both for those who would give praise and those who are sorry in their hearts and souls? Is it not a means, a manner of universal expression? Thus may the greater hope come.
Well, what does that mean to you?
Well, I think music has an ability to raise our vibrations, whether we're already joyous and we're just praising, or whether we're in our deepest, saddest time. There's something about music that just reaches beyond the material and really touches one's soul.
Oh, yes. I think a lot of times people who have difficulty focusing on meditation or prayer, if they find a piece of music, preferably instrumental, so they can have their own thoughts, but if they can have a piece of music that inspires them, perhaps it can get them into that mentality.
Mm-hmm. And I think animals benefit from music, and you know, people benefit from music, even plants, from the right kind of music that just makes you feel good.
Oh, yes. Well, thank you for doing the Thought for the Day today.
Have a great one.
That's all the time we have for the show today. Thanks to Dan Millman for talking to us about The Peaceful Warrior. You can find out more at his website, peacefulwarrior.com. Also, he's a featured presenter at the New Virginia Beach ARE Conference, The Four Purposes of Life, Finding Meaning and Direction in a Changing World, from September 7th to the 9th, 2012. Thanks also to Susan Lendvay for talking to us about Venture Inward. To find out more, go to edgarcasey.org. Thanks also to Allison Ray for the Thought for the Day, and most of all to you, the listener. Thanks for listening to Reflections, the Wisdom of Edgar Casey.